Good afternoon. This is Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, and my guests today are Rita Marsh and Bill Kite. This show is a memorial to Northern Ute elder Clifford Duncan, who passed away at the end of February.
I'm Bill Kite, and I'd like to say how I knew Clifford Duncan. I was really as a heritage resource manager for the White River National Forest. I had the privilege of having Clifford accompany us on trips into the flat tops for a week at a time over 20 years to identify indigenous sites with the public invited to participate, which was really quite a treat. And I really was privileged to know both Clifford Duncan and Kenny Frost in that capacity. And it was a 20-year long friendship.
And you worked on the powwow too.
That's correct. When we brought the powwow, well, you did too, Amy, and we brought it to Glenwood for the first time, uniting the three Ute tribes.
Yeah, I remember that. That was an incredible experience. Rita, how did you know him?
Well, I first met Clifford when Mountain Fair came to our front yard here in Carbondale, and he gave the blessing at Mountain Fair, and I was so impressed. He had such a presence, and I just kind of wanted to hang out with him. So any opportunity I got, I would take it. Most significantly, though, when Davina Kent Center for Human Flourishing was looking for a name, we asked Clifford for a name that meant a reconnection to spirit, because we feel that so much of the malaise that people are feeling now is because they've lost, we've lost connection to spirit. And in the village smithy, one day over lunch, we posed the question to Clifford, and he said, well, the sound would be Davi Nikent, and you'd have to spell it because it's oral. So we did, and I asked him, what is this literal translation of those words? And he said, it's always light.
It's always light.
It was so appropriate.
Yeah, it is.
It was interesting how I first got involved with the Ute Trail Project. That was due to Frank Olson, an old timer in the area, who came into my office one day, and these were his words. He said, I want to know what the hell you're going to do about the Ute Trail.
What the heck you're going to do about the Ute Trail?
That's the one, yeah. And so,
wow, I would have blanched.
I got up off my rear and followed him, and we started looking at the Ute Trail, and we realized we needed to invite indigenous peoples to help us, and that's how we got that project started.
Well, for those people who don't know what the Ute Trail is, what is it?
It's a crossing across the flat tops that was used by indigenous peoples for probably 8,000 years. You didn't have railroads, you didn't have highways then. That's how they crossed. In their seasonal round, looking for materials as the snow melted, they followed the game and the herbs and the plants and that sort of thing.
So you'd helped restore that?
And reintroducing the Utes back to their indigenous sacred sites. That's correct. It's quite a blessing to be able to do that.
Wow. That must have been incredibly intense.
It was, because, you know, being from the government, I'm here to help you, just doesn't work real well.
Yeah.
I realized that, you know, it was something I had to gain their trust with, because I meant, you know, what I was saying, and they found that out, that the forest really did want to renew that connection.
I'll talk about my involvement with Clifford a little bit later, but I wanted to play this clip.
Indian people have been weak for many years, and it's not their own doings. Perfect example, 1825, it was well known in the country back east that an Indian person cannot testify against a white person. So that white person can do whatever he wants with that Indian, because that Indian cannot take him to court.
Okay.
So that was the thing that they kept pushing up to today. So we're made to think that we're inferior, because that feeling of being inferior was established back in at the beginning of creating a country. Mm-hmm. And that's why in our study of American Indian history, that the doctrine that they used was a discovery doctrine, which was created by people in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that was based on religion. And we are heathens if we're not Christians. And we do not own a land if we're not Christians. We're merely occupying that land. To discover that meant that you own it. That's a different thinking. So that is the beginning of our being placed in the lower level, and it's been like that ever since, up to today. And that's why we've had a hard time trying to fight back, because the federal government said, no, you can't. They're so used to this fatherly image of federal government. It's really not funny.
Clifford had a way of provoking us to think outside the box, the cultural box we're all confined in, and open our doors of perception in order to see how he and his people lived close to the land, but not just close to it. We live on the land. They lived with the land.
And they were the land.
Exactly. One time Clifford told me, Bill, you can take the Utes out of the mountains, but you can't take the mountains out of the Utes.
I call what Clifford just spoke about his unfinished business, because he spoke about the doctrine of discovery and called for an apology when he came to greet elders who came to Carbondale in December 2009 for the 11th Native Gathering of the Americas. There's a beautiful article testifying to this in Sacred Fire magazine, and I still have copies of this if people are interested in reading in depth Clifford's message.
Is that also online at all? Are they online?
It may be online.
Okay,
yes.
I don't know though for sure. Okay.
But Sacred Fire magazine, The Heart of the Living World.
Okay. Is there anything from that article you'd like to share?
I think Clifford expressed it so beautifully in that little clip that you played. He really wanted to raise people's awareness about the doctrine of discovery, and I don't know that there are 40 people in Carbondale who know about it.
Well, and the unfortunate thing is it's not taught in school. The story is written by the conquerors, and I've tried to encourage the Utes, Northern Utes, to write their own history and to tell exactly what happened.
And what's been your response?
Well,
it's
I think that time will come. It just has to take the right person. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that will happen.
Yeah, because I know Clifford would talk about it all the time. He would talk about the history all the time. Every time he spoke, it seemed he would always preface it with the history of the Utes. I love that.
Well, he didn't want us to forget.
No.
And it's not that we do not inherit the sins of our fathers. We can't do anything about that today. But you certainly don't want to forget that, because that helps us to build that relationship with the people that he represented. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't do that, then we don't have a relationship with the people that really could teach us about mm-hmm. this land.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you're so right, Bill. We don't have that relationship, and then we don't really learn about the land.
You know, this next clip talks about how the difference between how indigenous people think and how non-native people think. I guess that's the way to put it. Our current system in the United States, the dominant system in the United States. I certainly don't want to put my foot in my mouth here. The system of laws and all of that, and talks about how we don't, I mean, he really explains the difference between the thinking, you know, and it's easy, I think, to say that, oh, you know, Native Americans are part of the land, that sort of thing, but it just goes so much deeper than that. You know what I mean? It goes so much deeper. And in listening to some of the, you know, coming up with these clips today and listening to these conversations I was fortunate enough to have with Clifford, I mean, he was so patient. He would explain it. I would look at him and he's like, "Have I lost you?" "Well, yeah." And then he'd explain it again, and then he'd explain it again. And he was so wonderfully patient until I finally understood what he was talking about. Not well enough to articulate it, really, unfortunately, but to understand how different the thinking really is. I'm not making any sense. Can you help me out here?
No, it's true. You know, it was sort of like when he would say, you know, "You archaeologist, you go on a site and you look inward. We go at a place and we look outward at all the connections to the land and the landscape." Mm-hmm. And we don't have a holistic view about anything with our fast food mentality that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's listen to what Clifford has to say.
The system of thinking, our relationship with nature, mm-hmm. is different than how this world thinks today. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't blend. And when I talk about being close to nature, they're looking at something else. Because the system has separated itself from nature. And they put it by itself. We are people. We are not part of the creation. Whereas in the earlier days, Indians were part of nature. They're not separate. So you try to bring that into, like, some of these policies. They don't see that. It's not accepted.
That's so Clifford. I had the privilege of meeting with him to go to the schools in Aspen when he did the Brother of the Bear program. And
Hello?
Is this Will?
Yes, it is. It's Will.
Hi, Will.
Hello?
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 Amy, this is Will.
Hi, Will. You're on the air.
All right.
And Rita was just talking about
Brothers of the Bear program that Clifford did with Char Graham in the Aspen schools and other schools here in the valley.
Yeah, he had a real connection with children and helping children.
What's your connection with, what was your connection or what is your connection with Clifford, Will Evans?
Well, I first met him in the Flat Tops with the first trip that my two youngest daughters and I made into Patterson Creek with Bill Kite and the Ute Trail Project. And we got acquainted there, and he was wonderful to my daughters, and we stayed connected. And it was a very dynamic and wonderful connection and relationship. Mm-hmm. And it continues to be.
What do you mean by dynamic?
Oh, it was alive. It was playful. It was volatile. I would call him up on the phone, and many times, and probably some of you have had this experience. I'd say, "Hi, Clifford. This is Will in Carbondale," and he'd say, "Who?" And he'd play that game for multiple repetitions, and finally, he'd relent. And, "Oh, yeah, yeah. How are you, Will?"
He was a wonderful person. He really was a wonderful person.
And Will would have been here. You would have been here, Will, had you not got stuck on the other side of the mountains, correct?
Yeah, I'm waiting to get through. Apparently, there is some kind of, gosh, and it's in a place where I remember years ago, somebody in the law enforcement area got shot many years ago, and it seems like something similar has happened recently. I don't know the details.
Well, we don't either yet. But I want to kind of keep this on talking about Clifford. But, you know, we're kind of talking about the difference in how he was talking about the difference between indigenous thinking and non-Indigenous thinking, sort of the system that we live with here in the United States. And before we go further, I'd like to remind people that you're listening to Valley Voices, a memorial to Northern Ute Elder Clifford Duncan, who passed on at the end of February. My guests are Bill Kite and Rita Marsh in the studio, and Will Evans on the phone. Are you still there, Will?
I am.
Okay, good. So I want to play another clip about sort of getting deeper into the Ute connection with the landscape. And you were talking earlier today, Bill Kite, about how it's the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. And so maybe we could talk about that in terms of Native Americans. So here's Clifford Duncan again.
There's no change of any sort that occurred because they were moving always with nature. And survival was the main thing that was actually leading their lifestyle in such a way that they follow the pattern of, say, the seasons. Summertime, they're high up in the mountains. And wintertime, they're down to the bottom. And their thinking was a little different than how it is for us today. Like, today I live in a house and I call it home. Whereas in those days, there was no structure that they could call home, but they had that feeling of home everywhere. So wherever they moved to, that was their home. They call it Tewipua, which is really a land where they belong, Tewipua. Like, this is my Tewipua, this is my land, or where I'm accepted as being part of that. It's a saying that you're part of nature, the land is you, and you're part of that. And I think that's what made it that way.
And with this 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, a lot of people don't really understand that the Indigenous peoples in this country had no name for wilderness because it was their home, just like Clifford said.
It wasn't separate.
Right. Mm-hmm. It wasn't separate at all. He said, we belong there. And a lot of us who go in the wilderness feel that's where we belong, but mm-hmm. we come back out to modern civilization. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are afraid to go in the wilderness or don't really want to think about it or don't want it designated because they don't feel at home without all their wonderful attachments to civilization, their electronic devices, their lifelines to what they consider reality, whereas a lot of us, and especially the Indigenous people, feel like that reality is that land where either you belong or you don't.
Right, and how the electronic devices and everything else, the distractions, take us away from that when our society says that it's connecting us.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. that's the difference.
It's completely the opposite.
Yes, it is.
Did you want to say something, Rita?
I just remember Clifford explaining to the young children at the schools about things that would come from the land, and he mm-hmm. had them try some sage. He said, if you have a sore throat, you might try some sage. And those who were brave enough to try it, some said, oh, we wouldn't eat that. And then others said, oh, it has a good taste and it feels good in my throat. So he was always present to introduce young people and old to what is available from the land that can help us.
Mm-hmm. And Will, you alluded to that earlier with your daughters there. He treated everyone, I think, equally, and that's an important thing to think about. He was very kind. He could be a curmudgeon. He could be a rascal and a coyote.
I never saw him as a curmudgeon. I mean, Will, have you ever seen him as a curmudgeon?
Oh, very much so. But what I would add to what you were saying is that Clifford was really an authentic bridge walker because his parents knew the ancient connection and ways directly, and he carried that across into his stance in the world as, you know, somebody who served in Korea and opened the Olympics and held hands with the Dalai Lama.
Well, and the amazing thing was when he was at the Olympics in Utah, for those people that saw him ride in on one of, he was one of the riders on the horses that came in with the Olympics.
You saw that, Rita?
He was number one.
He was number one.
And, and he met the Dalai Lama there also. But what happened that was amazing to me is he gave a prayer when they were building one of the arenas there. Mm-hmm. He gave a dedication prayer, and all the workers stopped. They couldn't understand what he was saying, but they had the respect. He had such power and influence. They had the respect to stop what they were doing while he said a prayer of dedication.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. I love that. It gives me chills. But he rode in on the first horse?
Yes.
Do we know where those horses came from?
Oh, they're ute horses.
Were they ute horses?
Oh, yeah.
So they could have been wild horses.
At one time, they were horse people, the Utes were, when they acquired them from the Spanish.
You know, and that's how I got to know Clifford. I mean, I think I met him through you, Bill, or at one of the gatherings, excuse me, Native American gatherings here in Carbondale. But I got to spend some incredible time with him when I was in graduate school, working on my thesis about wild horse management, and I needed to get, or wanted to get, Native American viewpoint, and I thought, what better person to talk with than Clifford Duncan? So, you know, made arrangements. He invited me to his home in Roosevelt, Utah, and I went up on this, oh, it must have been the coldest January day ever, and spent the day with him talking about wild horses. And it was just wonderful. I mean, he treated me like I was the only person ever. You know, he just was really focused, and I was really focused, and we had these fabulous conversations about all kinds of stuff. It wasn't just about wild horses. Excuse me. Then we went out to lunch. I took him out to lunch, and then we came back, and he had a small, well, it's not that small of a herd. He's 7 or 8 horses. Beautiful horses, and some of them probably were wild, descended from wild horses. But I have a couple of clips here. The first clip, I don't know, should we play the grandfather's horses first, or no? We're going to play one clip. He just had a lot to say about wild horses and BLM management and all of this stuff. And the horse is a spiritual animal, and the spirituality of animals connected with the land was just, it's absolutely amazing to me. I wish I could explain it, but I can't. He talked also about his family's connection with horses. So I have this little clip here about just the horse.
The Utes adapted themselves to the use of a horse in such a way that they looked at it like it was a spirit animal that could become part of you, or you could become part of it. There's a balance between an animal and a person. Mm-hmm. So the Indians begin to use it that way.
Horse people. They were definitely horse people. I mean, I don't know. Were the Utes the first people to...
Yeah, they were the first people to steal the horses from the Spanish, you bet. Yes, they were.
Wakara. Uh-huh. Yeah, Wakara was a famous Ute.
Yeah, he talked to me about the horse being an extension of the spirit and the spiritual connection between the Utes and their horses.
It's just a beautiful thing. And I have one more clip I want to play because we have about 2.5 minutes left. And I want to give everybody a chance to say something else. But this clip, he talks a little bit about his family's connection with horses.
My dad had horses that he had acquired from his grandfather's. Grandfather John Duncan had some horses. He had a lot of horses, and he was also raising cattle. And his father was the same way. So the family have had horses all the way from, say, way back. It was our family way. Being an outdoor person, a rodeo person, or a livestock person, having horses with us all the time.
That's just wonderful to me. He was a wonderful man. And listening to this, all of the recordings I have of him, made me really sad, but it really lightens my spirit, you know, to talk about him and to sort of bring his presence back in here. So I want to thank Bill Kite, Rita Marsh, and Will Evans for joining me today. Any last words?
Will, do you have any last words?
Well, Clifford paid me a huge compliment when he said to me one time, call me Pavi, meaning I'm your older brother. And that was wonderful, and it also carried with it the whole energy of being the younger brother when you were crossways with the older brother. And you know, Bill Kite saw that to some degree, and yet there was this enormous love that pervaded everything. And Clifford always said, if there's ever a problem, give me a call. I'll be here.
He was very generous. And Rita, did you have anything?
He was an amazing person who had friends all over the globe. And I don't think his family realizes how many people Clifford brought into his heart.
Well, blessings on Clifford's soul wherever he may be. And thank you all for joining me today.
A privilege.
It's been great. It's Thanks been a lot,
wonderful.
Will.
Thank you,
thank
Amy.
You, Amy.
Thank you all for your work. Really appreciate it.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Valley Voices, memorial to Northern Ute Elder Clifford Duncan. That's it for Valley Voices. Stay tuned for Pulse of the Planet and NPR Local News.